for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe. Thank you for joining us. Each week, we select from a menu of topics that can impact business growth to discuss with experts from a wide variety of disciplines. And today at the cafe, I'm very excited to have Patrick Schwarzfeger, business futurist, keynote speaker, and author with his recent book, Anarchy, Inc., on our show to discuss AI, machine learning, disruptive innovations, and other technology trends that will impact your business growth. Patrick, welcome.
Yeah, thanks so much, Angelo. I'm happy to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this conversation. But to get things started, why don't you give us the audience a little perspective about who you are and about your book and the things you do to make a living.
Yeah, sure. So I've been following technology trends since 2006. And ever since 2007, I've been basically a speaker full-time. So I really spend most of my time just going from different conferences really all around the world. And I've been following technology trends. And of course, that's a moving target. So early on, it was in the social media space, digital marketing. But then it moved into the big data space. And that, of course, evolved into the IoT, the Internet of Things. And all this proliferation of data then led to machine learning, and that led to artificial intelligence. So I also cover blockchain and some other topics. But the real heavyweight right now is artificial intelligence and what they call robotic process automation. And it's having a huge impact on businesses. There's a lot of jobs that are probably going to be displaced as a result of this, but that also translates into profits for business. So it's a complicated issue, but it's a fast-moving topic, and it's one that's really fun to dig into.
So when you talk about how it's going to impact jobs, I think in your book you wrote there was a study by Oxford University that estimates about 47% of American jobs could be lost in the next 20 years. So let's actually go on that tangent for a little bit and let's talk about this robotic
process automation.
Processing RPA, automation. Yeah. RPA. I love it. I actually used to work for a company called RPA, but it was not that one.
It was a different RPA.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, in the most simplistic version, you can break down the tasks of jobs in this country or any country into repetitive tasks and non-repetitive tasks. And what's happening is that the repetitive tasks are being replaced more and more by automation. And this study, which came out of Oxford and says 47% of American jobs are at risk of being displaced, believe it or not, 47% was actually a low number. A lot of the other countries were much higher, like China was 77%, India was 69%. So it's really, it's a stark example of what's going to happen. But also the assumption there that when people hear that statistic is that we're going to end up with 47% unemployment.
Right.
And that's not true either. Like the human beings are incredibly creative and the entrepreneurs are going to fill that space and take advantage. So I think what's going to happen is, yes, there's going to be a huge shift in the job market and a lot of people will lose their jobs, but we're also going to see an explosion of creativity and a lot of new services and a lot of new things that are out there that really people have not even thought about, you know, up until this point.
When I think of one of my clients that I work with, works with high school kids and college students about identifying their career path.
Yeah.
So one of the
really
things tricky. I would, in listening to this, is I'd want to sit there and tell them, you really need to investigate that career path that you might be picking because it might not be there, you know, as you go on in life.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of guidance you can talk about, you know, from that level and the way that students, you look at that? I like the repetitive aspect versus cognitive.
Well, that's exactly, and actually, you there's so many different directions we could go, but as far as what young kids, young people today should be looking at, it really falls into two buckets. On the one side, you have the STEM fields, of course, which is science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and that, you know, that area is exploding. There's huge demand. I have two nephews that are both really strong in the software engineering space, and they're doing fantastically well. But then on the other side, you have creativity and human communication, emotional intelligence. And these are things that machines are really difficult at. Like you have, for example, the comparison of doctors to nurses. Mm-hmm. And so we automatically assume doctors are safe and nurses aren't. But that's exactly the opposite, because it turns out that the vast majority of appointments you have with a general practitioner involves really just a couple of dozen diagnoses. And so that is actually quite repetitive. That could be replaced by some sort of an interactive interface. Meanwhile, the nurses have to have emotional intelligence and they have to build trust with their patients and compassion and empathy. Those are things that computers are not as good at. So I think both of those are necessary, but the overriding umbrella between the two is being a critical thinker and a problem solver. If you're a critical thinker and a problem solver, you're willing to think outside of the normal structure, right? The classic phrase, think outside of the box.
Right.
It really is true. Like, if you're, the more creative you are, and you can train yourself to be more creative, that's going to make you more valuable in the future either way.
Okay. Is there, and obviously these changes are evolving. It's not like we're going to wake up tomorrow and life has changed. But what are some of the industries or kind of business functions or groups that are really impacted today versus some that are really doing it well versus some of those that will benefit down the road versus some that are benefit today?
That's a great question. So the early winner in artificial intelligence were the recommendation engines. And so on Pandora and Netflix, and we go to Amazon, it recommends other products we might be interested in. That was the early winner of AI. But that's almost kind of old news today. It's been out there for a few years already. So what are the new ones? Well, the big ones are what they call NLP, which stands for natural language processing. And that's, you know, you talk to Siri on your phone, you talk to Amazon Alexa, you talk to Google Home. And that technology is getting much better very, very quickly right now, particularly the ability of the computer to add context from one question to the next. And we can talk about that if you like. But the big people who are affected there are the call center workers. So even today, when you call your bank, it says you can say things like check your balance or make a transfer. Right. Well, that, and it's clumsy today and people get frustrated, but it's getting better and better very quickly. And it's going to be not long. There's 3 million call center workers in the United States alone. Those jobs will increasingly go towards automation because it's cheaper. Imagine the HR nightmare of hiring, you know, thousands of call center workers and getting consistent protocol delivery and people calling in sick. And there's so many challenges. To move that to automation is a big one.
Right.
And I've got two more.
I want to hear them.
Yeah, let's do it. So the next one is the commercial drivers. So the autonomous vehicles are coming much faster than people expect. And there's really three areas. So the most number of unpredictable obstacles is in city driving. Less than that is on freeways, hub-to-hub, long-haul freeway trucking. And then even less than that is agriculture. Right. And the agriculture, the autonomous tractors, like the combines in Iowa, they're all being driven by satellites. So that's already autonomous today. Right. Go ahead.
I was saying, is that remote? I mean, is someone sitting there piloting that from a distance, or is that just based on programming and the predictive?
I mean, it depends on the harvesting company.
Okay.
But the leading harvesting companies, like, they will map out a farm, you know, plot of land literally to the square inch, and they will have there'll be people in that combine, but they won't be driving. They'll be doing other jobs. So that's already happening today. Right, and there's actually a company called Case IH, which is out of Silicon Valley, actually down in Salinas, and they're developing an autonomous tractor, which is pretty cool. But so then the trucking, the long-haul hub-to-hub trucking, 47% of trucking rates are the salary of the driver. So we're talking about it's incredible. So if you can get rid of the driver, you've got a 2-to-1 price advantage over your competitors. And I'm willing to bet that right now we're at the end of 2018. I think by the end of 2019, some state in the United States, and I have no idea which one, but someone is going to pass legislation to allow hub-to-hub long-haul trucking. And once that starts, it's going to move very, very quickly. There's 3.5 million commercial drivers in this country. And then the last one is retail cashiers. So the Amazon Go store has no cashiers. You just take what you want, walk out of the door. Earlier this year, I think March 2018, if I remember correctly, in China, the first personless bank opened, where there's a branch.
Wow, that's crazy.
And the lights go on. It's 8:30 in the morning. The doors are unlocked, but there's nobody there. So there's 3.4 million retail cashiers in this country. So between those three, we're at 10 million. Let's say half of those jobs are probably going to be gone within, say, 7 years.
Wow. I think I saw a commercial last night. I think it was for Walmart, actually. And they were talking, and the lady had her app open, and she was scanning her products. And at the end, she basically paid on her phone and walked out the door.
Yeah. And so these are all the things that are happening. And I think a lot of people don't appreciate how fast this could start. And what you really have to look at is the financial incentives. Where are the largest financial incentives to like to propagate these technologies. So in the trucking industry, imagine a trucking company that has a 2-to-1 price advantage in the industry. Every other trucking company is going to go full speed to try and match that.
They're going to have to, yeah.
So it'll go very quick. And the same thing's going to happen in retail stores. Now, the interesting thing with retail stores is when you have fewer people working in every individual location, that lowers the break-even point to justify opening a new location. And so what we find, like exactly what happened in the banks, the banking industry in the 80s when the ATMs were released, because the ATMs required fewer human salaries per bank branch, it allowed banks to open more branches. And so now we find bank branches in every neighborhood, whereas back in the 80s, you only had a branch in the center of the city, right? And we will see that as well with retail stores, where we could see a lot more retail stores open in less densely populated areas because it's cheaper to open an individual location.
Okay. Well, the one you commented on, which is customer service folks and being more, you know, more efficient in their call centers and their automation. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that because I can't tell you how many times I'm screaming at the phone going, customer representative. Been called a crazy man a few times. And so I'm looking forward. That's one of the ones I'm looking forward
to. We all have. Well, actually, can I say something on that?
Absolutely.
Because this is an interesting thing. So it's age related, and I'm 47 years old, but the older folks, let's say people whose ages start with a 4, 5, or a 6, right? On average, they prefer talking to a human being versus talking to a machine. But the younger kids in their 20s and 30s, they prefer talking to the computer because the computer has all the answers already, and they're confident that they know all the answers, whereas a human may or may not, depending on if you get a good person on the phone or someone who's not quite as good. So as we grow older, the young kids are going to start to prefer, like where we would prefer a human being, perhaps, those younger people increasingly are saying, I don't want to talk to a human being at all. I just want to deal with the website.
Just get it done. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I you know, when I think about this and you know, I remember Schwarzenegger as, of course, the original Terminator, and I always think Terminator when I start having these conversations.
Yeah.
But you wrote a line in your book. I want to read it to you and have you kind of talk about it. Dramatic increases in productivity will diminish the value of human capital. Yeah. Algorithms and robotics displace literally hundreds of millions of jobs. So, I mean, we're having this conversation. Can you expound upon that a little bit? Because that is probably broader, ominous to me than some of the conversation we've had so far.
Sure. Well, the title of my book is Anarchy, Inc. So I do expect, I'm not expecting violence in the streets, but I expect a very decentralized libertarian evolution over the years ahead, because it's going to be every man for himself, every person for themselves, I should say. But you know, if all of these, and when I say hundreds of millions of jobs, I'm not saying just here in the United States, but I'm really, because we only have about 150 million jobs here already, 170 million perhaps. But around the world, certainly automation could replace that many jobs. And so there's going to be a lot of transition into new fields. And that could cause a lot of anarchy and a lot of disruption. And in fact, we already saw that in the 2016 election of Donald Trump. Whether you like him or not doesn't matter, but at least not for this conversation. But there's a certain percentage of the population that feels like they've been left behind and they're not being taken care of by the way the economy is evolving. Well, whatever percentage that is, let's say it's 5%, 10%, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's going to grow. So more people are going to fall into that category. And so we see this playing out all around the world, with Brazil going with a populist electoral victor, and the Philippines with Duterte and Erdogan in Turkey. And, you know, you get into even in Germany, there's implications, and Wilders in Amsterdam, and you go around the world, and this trend is happening everywhere because people do feel increasingly left behind, and they have a right to be frustrated, right? These people started losing their jobs in the 80s. The blue-collar jobs, yeah, right? They started to go away in the 80s. So they, for 30 years, these people have felt like no one's really paying attention. So they have a right to be frustrated, but that's going to impact our democracies and our social evolution as a result.
Okay. I heard something on the news this weekend, and I'm going to read it to you and get your comment on it. It said, data is the new oil and China is the new Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
The U.S. wins on AI research, but China wins on implementation. And the premise of that is the reason they're winning on implementation because they have 10 times the amount of their population using phones where they're gathering this data. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, China, I mean, that's another thing I think people here in the United States don't appreciate. how much progress China is making. I mean, arguably, they are winning in a lot of areas already. And you look at, you know, just infrastructure spending. This is a leading economic indicator. So if you build a deep water port, for example, mm-hmm. it's reasonable that 4 years later, you're going to have commerce going through that port. That's a natural evolution. So by looking at who's investing in infrastructure, you can get an idea of what's going to happen in the years to come. Percentage of GDP spent on infrastructure investment is the highest of any country in China, 8.8%. By comparison, we have 2.4%, India 5.6%.
Wow.
So they are investing heavily in infrastructure, and that's a major, major advantage. And that applies equally well to the technology sector. And the government there, which is not democratic, which we might say is bad, but the fact is democracy is a lot less efficient than an autocratic system. I'm not saying it's better, you know, one way or the other. I'm just saying they get stuff done. Like, they don't fool around. And they are actively promoting and supporting their major technology players, including Tencent and Alibaba and you know, WeChat and all these Huawei. They all are very heavily supported, and they are... So they don't have 10 times our population. They have about 4 times our population, roughly. But their penetration for mobile pay, as an example, with WeChat Pay and Alipay, is way higher than we have here. So they do have enormous data, and they're making investments. They want to be an AI leader, and I would argue that they might be there already. They are doing some very, very... They're very aggressive, and they're smart. I mean, I'm not saying... There's a lot of things that we can criticize China about,
right.
But we also have to give credit where credit is due. And they are taking strides, and we need to be aware of that because we compete against that in a global world.
Exactly. It, also, in your book, you talked about social bots, Siri, Google Now, Alexa, Cortana. So what is social bot technology, and how is that going to play a role in really in our lives and marketing? What kind of businesses are going to probably be early adopters of that and beyond, and how's that going to work?
Well, so it falls into a couple of categories. So chatbot generally refers to human being talking to a machine via text. Social bot refers to a human being talking to a machine versus natural language, like actually having a conversation. And there's people define these things a little bit differently, but that's a simple way to look at it. And then there's this thing called the Turing test, which is a gentleman by the name of Turing way back in, I think, the 60s. But anyway, the idea is, at what point can the human being no longer distinguish the machine from another human being? And via chatbot, in other words, via text, arguably we're already there. So people already are at a point where they can't necessarily tell that this is a machine because it seems so real. It seems so human. Mm-hmm. But on the social bot, it's less so. It's behind, right? But that is what, and we talked about this earlier, that technology is evolving very quickly right now. So the question is, where is it going to propagate? And there's really two different buckets there. And the first one we already talked about, it's the call centers. And I think that in the years ahead, as little as 3 to 5 years, most large brands will have to have some sort of natural language interface to communicate with their customers, particularly the younger customers.
Okay.
So that's going to come very quickly. But the other one is companionship robots. And so there are companionship technologies where you could have companions for, like, in other words, robotic companions for seniors. You can even have, believe it or not, robotic companions for middle-aged people, even single men, where we're seeing this propagate, where these technologies are there. And we have to keep in mind, for example, that there's a deficit of 30 million women in China compared to men of the same age, largely a result of the one-child policy. So 30 million men are mathematically incapable of finding a female partner. There's a 40 million deficit in India, 70 million between those two countries. So that is a market, and it's a profitable market, and so we see development there as well. So it's really call centers on the one hand and companionship on the other, and that's where it's going to propagate.
Oh, that's really interesting. You know, I think all this is a result of data. The availability of data.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, I have a market research background, and, you know, I grew up doing qualitative and quantitative. We got into some predictive and prescriptive analytics and things like that. And through another business, one of my partners is investing his time in machine learning and things like that. But we're scratching the surface compared to much larger organizations that are really investing in this. And really competitive, from a competitive standpoint, it seems like those who have the most data wins in this kind of ball game. So let's talk about data and competitive advantages. And I think also we, again, in your book, talked about the fact that the price of access to data, the ability to store data is all shrinking, it's and all making cheaper. More availability. So,
yeah, I mean, it's, and that's so there's data processing, data bandwidth, data storage, and those are kind of the three pillars of technology. And the cost structure is just collapsing, so it's getting cheaper and cheaper, and that's why we see this proliferation of data. But it's very true that these large companies, technology infrastructure providers, people like Google, Facebook, and so on, are in an absolute scramble to try and get as much data as they can as quickly as possible. And the best example is actually precisely the social bot example that you brought up a second ago. So Apple gets their data from Siri, right? Mm-hmm. Usage data.
Yep.
Google gets their data from using our phones and Google Home. Amazon gets their data from Amazon Alexa with their install base. So the question is, where does Facebook get their data? So just recently... Sure. It's some just recently, Amazon. Gosh, I just with that little sound
yeah,
that came up in the
background.
Who is
that? Who is that? We got somebody. We have a guest on the
all
show.
All of a sudden, so Facebook released their API allowing regular businesses to tap into their Messenger platform and use their Messenger technology to create these interfaces that they can use for their own customer service needs. That is a brilliant move by Facebook to get access to data. I would imagine in say 3 to 5 years that there's going to be tens of thousands of businesses all around this country using Facebook Messenger API to deliver their customer service needs, and that gives them a huge trove of data. Right? We see the same thing in autonomous driving. Tesla has something like 4 billion miles driven using their autonomous technology. So they have a huge data advantage. And all these proofs of concept, like the Ollie bus in London and Nutonomy, whatever, in Singapore, and there's now Waze has a license in Mountain View and Los Gatos in the Bay Area. These are all pilots and proofs of concept, and they are trying to get as much data as they possibly can, as fast as they can, because that's the currency of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that's how machine learning, the number one ingredient to make machine learning work is data.
Data.
Everybody needs data. The more, the better. And so it's a race. Like Facebook paid $19 billion for WhatsApp. Why did they do that? They wanted the data. They were losing the younger generation. WhatsApp had the younger generation. They paid $19 billion to have access to the data, which gives you an idea how valuable that data is.
Right. Well, a lot of things we're talking about are you know, I'm taking the perspective of big organizations. So as we kind of start to wind this down, believe it or not,
yeah,
what are small to medium-sized businesses? How do they really compete and not get over that barrier? I mean, even when I talk to a client about market research, I mean, I think they see big dollar signs. It's like, oh, I can't afford to do that.
Yeah. So,
and what I'm doing is, you know, getting the voice of the customer, if you will, has nothing to do with this kind of data collection. So what are some of the recommendations that you might make to that kind of small SME side of the business?
Yeah, well, it's actually my favorite. I mean, the simplicity of this is incredible. But the way this works is the large, say, Fortune 100, even Fortune 500 companies, they invest huge amounts of money to develop these new technologies to be there first. But then what happens after that? Well, they find out the early use cases that are profitable and where it's really working. And then that technology is incorporated into the enterprise software providers like ERP, like okay. SAP, for example, mm-hmm. or Oracle or Epicor, BMW or BWM software. Anyway, there's a bunch of different ERP platforms and also the CRM platforms like Salesforce.com and Zoho and all
sure.
these things. So, and there is incredible capabilities built into these softwares that a lot of the SME people have already paid for, but they're not utilizing. So it's just like Microsoft Excel. Everyone has it, everyone uses it, but they actually only use 5% of the capabilities.
Yeah, exactly.
There's 95% more that they could be doing, like pivot tables or whatever else, macros that they don't know how to use. Turns out the number one easiest thing an SME company can do, if you're a CEO of a medium-sized company, the number one thing you can do is bring in some trainers to train your people to use the software that you've already paid for and get them to learn the new capabilities, because it's already there. If you learn just how to use what you already have, many times you can see huge improvements in operational efficiency, and you're actually not getting anything beyond what you've got already.
Wow. Okay. I want to just real quick on virtual reality and augmented reality.
Yeah.
My wife works for a large cruise line, and they just launched their new ship.
Yeah.
And they have a room where the entire ship was in virtual reality, and that's how they would go, and they would build the ship, and they would take
wow.
tours walking around this. So it was mind-boggling, and I watched a video the other day. So where do you see augmented reality and virtual reality going from a business standpoint?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's really, I guess, three areas. There was just a story earlier this week of a company, I forget, was it Boeing? I forget, but they used virtual reality to accelerate the development of a new design of helicopter. It dramatically accelerated the development cycle. So there's one application just there. But I would say there's two main things that are happening with, and we're just waiting for some headset to gain broad market adoption, which hasn't happened yet.
Right.
But it will one day. And when it happens, this will all happen very quick. Number one, training applications to allow people to do training in a much cheaper virtual environment. But number two, every large B2C brand company selling, you know, business to consumer, they're all going to be in a race to develop increasingly immersive, increasingly dynamic experiences that are going to be available on their websites for anyone to peruse. And so we're going to see a world very soon where someone could literally spend all day doing 100 different virtual experiences. Oh my gosh, did you see the one that Ferrari just announced? And oh, the Coca-Cola one was super fun. And Burton Snowboards has this incredible one.
Yeah, it's going to spread like crazy.
It's going to spread like crazy. And we're going to see a situation where the virtual world is competing with the real world. And for a lot of people in our society, the virtual world will win. And that will contribute to the anarchy that this book is about.
All right, fantastic. One last question. As a business owner, what keeps you up at night?
You know, what keeps, honestly, so I spend all of my time, every day, all day, trying to keep up with the changes, and I have a hard time doing it. I can't imagine the challenge for regular CEOs that have a particular business that they have to focus on and at the same time keep up with all these accelerating changes. So the thing that keeps me up, that gives me anxiety, if you will, is that the pace of change is accelerating so much that it's just hard to keep up with it all, even if you do it full time the way I do.
Okay, I think we have to wrap up here. Patrick, thank you so much. It's been a great discussion. And so why don't you tell the listeners real quick how they can get a hold of you and about your book and things like that?
Sure. I mean, of course, the book's available on Amazon. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today. And if anyone's curious about myself and the work that I do, the easiest way to get that is actually to go to bookpatrick.com, which is a little subtle call to action in there. But my last name's a doozy, so it's a lot easier to just go to bookpatrick.com, and that's the work that I do. And I would love, if you have comments, send them to me. I'd love to hear from people.
Again, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you for joining us at the cafe today. You can find out more about me and read my blogs or view my shows at theponzigroup.com or connect with me on LinkedIn. You can also subscribe to our show at thebusinessgrowthcafe.com, where we are now on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and coming soon to Streaker, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, and others around the world. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.